Adventure!
Shotgun Alfred is his most powerful form.
And oh my gosh.
Excitement!
Percy is stealing!
Mystery!
It's Gary Frank's art drawing, Gary Frank's art!
All of this in college, comics, and other strangeness.
Oh, wow. You were in Uper country.
I should know where Uper is, but that doesn't even sound familiar to me.
Well, no, a Uper is like a
UP or person, yes, right.
It's like they talk like this, dearie.
Yes, I know what you're talking about now. That makes sense.
You're in that point where the French Canadian accent has permeated American soil.
I don't know about that. I'm not aware of any accents.
It's not so much a straight accent as it is like a bit of a slur, like you slur the words together.
Oh, no, I think you're the one making the slurs here. You're over here just being racist.
You Upers. You doggone Upers.
Heckin' Upers destroying our society.
your polite difficulty leaving a social engagement in your Aaron Rodgers dirt jerseys. Screw all of you.
Aaron Rodgers dirt jerseys? What? What does that even mean?
Charlie Barons. Have you ever listened to Charlie Barons? Minute Talk Minute?
No.
He's like the spokesman of all Upers, and you should.
Okay. The spokesman of Upers.
To all of our audience out there, if you care at all for Midwest culture, watch Charlie Barons on the Manitowoc Minute. He's got his little camouflage suit and the whole nine yards. The ultimate Uper.
That is pretty good right, actually.
So,
a camouflage suit.
Yes, camouflage suit. He's got a little cheese hat, his beer.
A cheese hat? Not just like a cheese head. He's got like just a cheese hat.
Like the Packers cheese hat.
Cheese head. It's called a cheese head, bro. Where do you think you live?
I know, but the hat is what makes you a cheese head.
I just thought the cheese head made you a cheese head, but you know what? I can see where you're coming from.
You gotta put the cheese on your head to become a cheese head. Otherwise, you're just a wannabe cheesehead.
And nobody wants a wannabe cheesehead.
Nobody wants a wannabe cheesehead.
Nobody wants that. Absolutely no one.
No one.
So yeah, I like Wisconsin, not because I like the football or the Packers, but I do have to say I love how rabid our fans are.
If the Bears fans can still love the Bears after sucking nonstop for decades, then the least we can do is show love to our other Midwestern teams, right?
This is true. I think it also has the fact to do with Wisconsin is incredibly, like, alcoholic. And nothing helps you cheer for your team like being totally inebriated.
This is also true. I do not deny it in any capacity. There was a map I saw the other day of like bars per county kind of thing. Specifically, it's like more bars than hospitals in a county. Yep. And Wisconsin was just blood red. the rest of the country, yep. That's fine. A little in Illinois, a little in Minnesota. Wisconsin was just like glowing red with all counties that have more bars than hospitals.
We've got some problems, to say the least.
Yep. Anyhow, now that you know all about where we live, welcome to the show. It is just me and my co-host Nathan today. Billy's calling in sick because 2021 is in fact no better than 2020.
I feel betrayed and lied to.
I mean, it's literally called 2021.
Yeah, someone pointed that out to me today and I was just like, no, we can't let it win.
But what good things do we have still in 2021 that you also had in last year that you can still enjoy? Our show, of course. So
I was going to go with cheese, but you know what? That's fair, too.
Cheese as well. See, spoken like a true Wisconsinite.
I know where my bread gets buttered.
Well, sure, dearie. So welcome. We're continuing on our very first indie title to be tackled on this show, though you could almost... It's so big, it's barely indie at this point. We're looking at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The last episode, we looked at issue 1, just 1 as a standalone. And we're going to be looking at issues 2 and 3, as well as the Raphael one-shot, Me, Myself, and I. Those are the three issues we're going to be looking at from the run today.
Yeah, that was a Raphael one-shot. I couldn't remember which turtle it was, and I was like, man, if I admit that, everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh, you don't know which turtle that one is by a little band? And I'm like, well, my friends, I am colorblind. I can't tell the difference.
It wouldn't help you anyway, actually, because in these issues, they're all wearing red. It's the cartoon that gave them the colors, and they've kept them basically since. But back in the original issues, they all wore red, so it would not have helped you even if you weren't colorblind.
Okay, that makes sense. It's like, man, I could have sworn they all had different colors, but here they're all just red all the time.
Yeah, no, you're not crazy. We want to just gaslight you and make it seem like it was your fault, but no, it is in fact the way they are all colored. And yes, we are looking at the colored versions of this. I'm sorry. That's the one I happen to have. Don't worry.
Wait, so there's a non-colored version of this?
Well, the original issues were all printed in black and white, like the first issue we looked at last time.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
It really does good in color, I have to say. Like, I'm not sure how well this would work in black and white.
It works pretty well. I've read a couple of the black and white stuff, and it works well. But I love the color. I love seeing them all in the red headband just because it's so dated and not the way they are now. And they've been recolored multiple times. So if anyone's curious, I'm looking at like the collected IDW color classics right now. Like obviously they've been recolored a couple of times, but this is the one I think probably does the best job. Even if they does recolor Casey to look like his action figure as opposed to his red shirt self.
Is Casey supposed to stinking look like Jason Voorhees? That's the first thing I thought when I saw him. It's like, this is a weird Jason.
Yeah, we'll get to Casey Jones a little bit more later because he's a whack character to say the least. But we are not looking at all of the one shots just because the way at least they're laid out in these collected volumes, they really break up the flow of the story. But we are looking at Raphael just because it introduces the Casey Jones character who, of course, comes up further on down the plot line. And this is where the book actually gets an ongoing plot. So, like, the first issue, like I said, it was a one and done. It wasn't originally going to get sequels, and we looked at it as a standalone as a result. Now we have an actual ongoing narrative, or the start of an ongoing narrative. This first arc kind of sets up the principal characters, and also sets up the major conflict of this first arc, which is shocker, if you've seen basically the 90s movie, you would know that Splinter gets captured, though the circumstances are very different in this than it is in the film. But the main conflict of this first arc is them trying to get Splinter, their adoptive father, back. But that doesn't happen till the end of this arc. So let's just kind of get right into it, looking at issue 2 here. So
open up with a turtle jumping at the title screen, and yelling, "Kiss your butt goodbye," with 3 exclamation points. And all I can say is that's a bold opening. I'll give it that.
Yeah, just straight up too. Like, there's no background behind him or anything. It feels like this is one of those like pinup pages they made of like a convention or something. It's like, hey, put it in the book. Why not? And so, yeah, we have Raph opening us up, cold opening in the middle of a fight scene. Though it turned out to be a friendly fight, as it were. Raph and Mikey are sparring while Leo, Donnie, and Splinter are watching the TV. And on the TV, we are introduced to our principal villain of this issue, Baxter Stockman, revealing his newest invention, the Mausers. Now, if you're a long-term fan of the Turtles, you probably are familiar with Baxter and the Mausers. If you're only a fan of the original cartoon, however, you may be surprised to find out Baxter is black in this, and he's black in every version. I have no idea why he was white in the original cartoon. Absolutely no idea. Or why he turned him into a fly. He is not turned into a fly in this in any capacity.
Wait, what?
In the original cartoon, Baxter was made white. I'm not going to try to put motives on the creators of the cartoon, but that doesn't look good in any capacity. And he also, to sell toys, mutates into a fly at some point during the course of the show.
Okay, that's a spoiler if ever I've heard one. I haven't seen it, but holy crap, he turns into a fly?
Yeah, no, that does not happen here. He's just the inventor of the Mausers. And the Mausers, if you're familiar with them, are like little robots that go and hunt rats and mice. and essentially eat them. And I think, first of all, the idea is hilarious in and of itself. It's like literally building a better mousetrap. Like, I'm sure everybody's heard that saying, like, oh, to build a better mousetrap kind of thing. Literally, it's I cannot imagine a circumstance where the rats in New York City are so bad that it's like, oh, well, time to throw billions of dollars at this with next generation mouse hunting capabilities. Like, I have so many questions. What if they walk into my house? What if I trip? What if I hit one with my car? Do I have to pay damages? Who owns this? Is this the city owning these? I have no idea. And the book isn't interested in that anyway, because that turns out to not be Baxter's actual plan.
No, big surprise. This mysterious scientist man who invents a very threatening looking robot is in fact not interested in peace. Who could have guessed? Truly the plot twist of the ages. Also, I looked at the Mausers, and so they don't just eat the stuff. He says that they can consume about the size of 5 adult rats, and then it will return to a drop-off area to deposit and then go back out hunting again.
Which, first of all, gross. Who cleans up the deposit area? Just all these dead rats. Like, oh gosh.
Yeah, that's a great question. Oh dear. Oh, maybe they just deposit directly into an incinerator or something.
That could be.
Anyway, and that'll come up later, or at least it'll come up with me. It doesn't really come up in here, but this is a nice self-contained idea. If this actually worked, that would be pretty rad.
Mm-hmm.
Key phrase, if it actually worked. Let's find out how it goes.
Right. So, cutting back to, cutting essentially through the TV to Baxter in his laboratory, as it were, we have his intern, April O'Neil, who most people are familiar with her as like a reporter character, because that's normally how she's portrayed. Here she's just a lab intern to Baxter Stockman. So she works with him. And she gets worried because there are a series of burglaries rocking New York City. And she's wondering if possibly the Mausers could be used to be stolen to commit these burglaries. Because essentially they're burrowing into like vaults from underneath. It's like, ah, somebody could use a Mauser to accomplish that. And Baxter Stockman's like, oh, don't worry. Only I can control the Mausers. And she's like, oh, that's great. He's like, because I'm the one committing the burglaries. And then he immediately tries to kill her. And I'm like, why did you not just play that bluff? Like, just like, oh, don't worry. She seemed comfortable after you play like, oh, don't worry. Only I control the Mausers. But no, he immediately tries to kill her with these tiny, angry, chompy robots. And they notice her into the sewage system.
Which, like, all I can say is, once again, You have a person trapped in a closed room, and you somehow fail to secure the kill. I mean, I'm glad the rear villain is unable to kill someone at point-blank range and doesn't own any type of firearm or any type of self-defense tool. But once again, you're an idiot for just letting them get away.
Yeah, and I think specifically it was the 2012 cartoon that actually realized, like, Baxter Stockman is hilariously stupid. He thinks he's smart. But he never gets anything to actually work out for him in all of Turtles lore. Like, I think IDW was the first publisher to actually, like, hey, maybe we should make this villain actually intimidating. And that's a trick with this book in the first few early issues. Is like, the first issue is like, there's a one and done. Nobody has any personality. There is no supporting cast. It's over. Now they need to figure out how to round out the cast and figure out new villains after Shredder's dead. And the results, at least these first few results, are like very stereotypical comic, like goofball villain. Like, I think there's a point where he literally maniacally laughs. I'll point it out when it comes out. It's like with the ha 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 ha. It's like, is he insane? Is he just selfish? Is he violent? Does he have like little man syndrome? I don't know. I have a
little man syndrome.
He's kind of short. I don't know. I have no understanding of this man's motivation, and the way he's written does not help me to comprehend what he's doing or what he wants necessarily. And I'm not saying every villain needs to be super well fleshed out, but I just am confused by this man. Like, greed, sure, totally good. But then why don't you just play that lie? He's written like a murderous psychopath, but he doesn't actually murder anybody. He just tries to.
I never thought of that. You're right. He never actually succeeds at anything he attempts.
No. Yeah,
he almost did. Well, I mean, he almost did. But we'll talk more about that, I guess. But like, he almost did. But key phrase, almost.
Right. So the Mausers end up chasing April into the sewage system, which of course is where our four heroes in half shells live. So they rescue her and they end up taking her back to the lair and they end up explaining their whole origin to them, to her. So that's like summed up. It's like a later after summing up the origin story that you just read. It's like, oh wow, what a complicated story. And first of all, it's like, I don't know. I guess it's because maybe I am so familiar with like the 90s movie where it's like it's a dramatic sticking point where it's like you brought someone into the lair. Why would you do that? But the girls just bring her in and they're more than keen to just like, yeah, we're mutant monsters. We've tried to hide our existence thus far, but now we're going to tell you literally everything we know about ourselves.
Yeah, we decided to stop hiding right now because you're apparently the first person we ever met who was actually in trouble.
And more than that, April's chill with it. Like at first she seems, you know, like the classic, you know, I can't handle this fainting April. But she gets over it pretty quick. And she's like, oh, okay. I have now four turtles who are my friends.
And I'm glad you're so accepting, but at the same time, do you just accept everything that comes at you like this? Because,
and like, there's a point where it's like, I don't know, sometimes movies almost like take it too far the other way, where it's like, I don't believe it. Where it's like, okay, A, you just saw them. B, they just helped you. And D, they're kind of nice, so I wouldn't be too worried about them. I mean, they're hospitable. They talk like people, near as I can tell. So I guess there is a point where it's like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. You'd be pretty chill with these guys. They seem nice enough.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how open I would be to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if I'm honest.
I mean, I guess not. Well, so they're in their lair and, you know, helping April out and keeping her safe when all of a sudden on the TV, which, don't you just love it when the villain announces his evil plan on television? On the TV is Baxter Stockman, who's literally, he's not blurred out or anything. He's just like, there's a shadow over his face. And literally, he's like, comes on, he's all shaded, he's like, greeting citizens of New York. And April's like, that's Baxter! I'm like, okay, if you, the intern, can tell that's Baxter just from, like, his hands and his voice, literally everyone in his company, the company he owns, knows that that's him. He's not hiding his identity super well or anything like that.
That's a good point. He didn't really put any effort into not being recognized. I guess he just thought he was untouchable. And, I mean, that's an easy mistake to make, but for someone who's capable of so much engineering, kind of disappointing the fact he's totally tactically incapable.
Yeah, and again, it's another one I was like, is this man crazy? Because I feel like he's written like he's crazy. But I think we're supposed to believe he's very intelligent and cunning, but he's not written that way. He's written like a maniac. He laughs maniacally, and he doesn't think his plans through super far, and you'd think then, oh, a crazy person, he's got these maniacal citywide goals, but he doesn't. His goal is, I'm going to hold the city hostage. I'm going to use Mausers to knock down buildings by destroying their foundations, unless you give, what was it, extort $1 billion from all the major businesses of New York. So it's still like, it's a completely selfish, greedy financial goal. But even that's like, okay, so everyone coughs up the money and it's like, yay, now I'm king of the hill. Also, I'm going to jail. Like, what, are you going to book it to South America with that money? Like, what are you going to do? Because everyone can tell that's you. It's not like nobody will ever trace it to you. Yeah, so his thing is, he's going to, and this is so unfortunately aged. I thought this was here. His threat is, he obviously wants to be paid. And the first thing is, he wants to be paid $20 million before 3 p.m. tomorrow. Otherwise he will knock over one of the World Trade Center towers.
Yep.
Which is a serious oof in hindsight. And it's like, this has happened multiple times prior to the actual events of 9/11, where it's like, you know, like some supervillain is involved with the World Trade Center, because who would actually destroy them? You'd have to be truly evil.
Yeah, right? You'd have to be like a supervillain or something, right?
So that's unfortunately aged. Sorry. Also, can we just address how amusing it is that even after switching from Captain America New Deal to something silly and fun like Ninja Turtles. We still can't get away from 9/11.
Yeah, also the threat on TV, the villain appearing and threatening on TV, that also made me think of 9/11. I know there wasn't any TV threat of 9/11, but I still can't. I'm not sure if I actually did see it on TV, but I still can't get the image out of watching the two towers fall via television.
Yeah. I feel like this is our destiny to just talk about comic book 9/11 for some reason.
I mean, I feel like we could create a therapy group or something. Cause...
therapy group. Everyone gets therapy dog like Ahsoka, or you could have a therapy Ninja Turtle. Depends on what you
want. I think a Ninja Turtle. I feel like it has more utility, even if it's less huggable.
Yeah. Feel all hard if you hug a Ninja Turtle, I think, because of their shell that goes around.
I don't think they like hugs either. They seem like they're kind of the edgy teenager who just doesn't really like physical contact.
No one understands me because I'm a turtle.
I mean, you are hecking right. No one understands these Ninja Turtles.
Ahsoka, no. No, I'm going to lock you in here if you can't behave. I have to record. Sit. Good girl. That's what I want you to do all the time. Go lay down. Okay, good girl. So, after Baxter announces his evil plan, and April immediately identifies him, but the police don't for some reason, the Turtles decide to head on in and confront him.
April identifies Dr. Stock. I almost call him Dr. Stockholm. Stockman. Immediately, despite the fact that, I mean, he's already appeared on television and City Hall, and he's not even hiding his identity, practically. No one else puts two and two together, or nobody does anything about it one way or another.
Yeah.
So then the Turtles be like, aight, time to go. This is our moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they grab their weapons, and they just bust into Stockman's lair, and they, like, put their sword against, or Leonardo puts his sword against Stockman, and he's like, your reign of terror has ended, Stockman. And this is what I mean when I say this book's trying to now get identity after the jokey first issue, where it's trying to, like, oh, okay, we're trying to give our characters, like, likable personality traits and stuff. Because the Turtles of the first issue would have just murdered Stockman and called it a day.
Yeah, that's what I kind of expected, honestly. It's like, wait, is this the same Ninja Turtles we're looking at? Because I'm pretty sure normally you just thinking slice them in half.
Well, and more later on, Raphael is like, oh, I should have killed him. And Leo's like, no, that's not what we do. I'm like, your body count is at least in the upper 20s, maybe 30s in the last issue. But now it's like, we don't kill people if we can help it. Alien monsters later, you'll see, sure, we'll kill them. But normal people, well, we got to be somewhat likable.
This is really a rework of the whole violence in Turtles. Like, the violence in this book is like less than half of the first five pages of the last book, practically.
Well, and then people make the argument, and this is why I say when I say people, I think a lot of people misunderstand these books. It's like, oh, the Turtles are violent and edgy in the first issue. It's like, okay, no, they're violent and edgy in issue number one because it's making fun of violent edginess. That was the way of comics of that time, and he's making fun of it. When they actually try to do something serious, they're kind of more stock superheroes. They're actually very similar to what you see in the 2002 series or something like that. They're pretty, I mean, they're not stereotypical at all because they still have their own distinct personalities, but their modus operandi is still pretty normal superhero stuff. It's not like they're killing machines, and it's not like the content is all of a sudden this rated R bloodbath.
I mean, and they could have gone that direction, honestly, from
easily.
Number one, I had a little fear of like, oh no, is this just going to turn into like the watch these ridiculous things do incredible violence to poorly drawn humans? And I'm like, if so, count me out. But no, that's not the direction they went at all.
Although, to be fair, I think the humans actually have improved from the first issue to this one. I don't know why I feel that way, but I do.
I think they've improved some. Some of them have improved, and some more than others. But April and a lot of these scenes looked really derpy.
Yeah.
She's not, her face and is not overly feminine, such that I did
sometimes
is April a guy or a girl?
Even her hair isn't overly feminine. I mean, granted, she was just chased through the sewer.
Not a problem intrinsically. Like, not everyone needs to look very obviously gendered, but it's very helpful in comics because I can't see their Adam's apple, which is the only way I know whether a person is male or female.
So there's literally a sequence where literally he starts laughing hysterically. And Raphael's, somebody tells Raphael, I see that's the problem not being able to tell him apart, tells them to shut this loony up. So again, is Baxter Stockman is insane? There's a massive smack and they knock him unconscious. But he's laughing hysterically because all of the Mausers are pre-programmed to return to his lab and kill everybody inside. So they knock Stockman out and they prepare for the oncoming onslaught of Mausers. They also have, he also blew up the elevator shaft. So it's like rocks and stone and stuff.
Can we also just talk about how whiffed the turtle's assault of his base is? Like, this is a very weak villain encounter. For one, they just enter his lair without any resistance whatsoever. Literally nothing. Like, they say, all right, we're going to go to his lair. One frame later, we're in his lair with a sword to his face. It's like, wow. This guy had no concept of defense. I mean, particularly as well, he gave away his identity, and now he has no type of defense at all. Like, what?
Bro, I got a theory. He basically gave away his identity. He programmed all of the Mausers to show up at the base and kill everyone inside, including himself. He's rigged it with plastic explosives. Does Baxter Stockman just want to die?
I mean, there's easier ways.
There is, but if you're a super psychomaniac, straight up, this is my best bet at this point. Does Baxter Stockman just want to be killed by somebody else? That's my best bet, because there's no other... His plan doesn't make sense in any capacity unless he just wants to be killed. He's like, I heard the most superheroes ever, so I'm going to have them come kill me. But they don't murder anymore, so it sucks for him.
I got nothing. It's bizarre. And additionally, the turtles then immediately botched the capture, or not killing, the capture of him, by just letting him headbutt his way out. Like, not like he had a gadget or a super move or is a martial artist. Just thinking headbutts a turtle, then kicks the other one, and then he gets to his computer and makes this difficult. It's like, you have four of you, and he just beats two of you just like that? It's like, this guy is not a superhuman. He's got no tricks up his sleeve. He just headbutts you. And, like, what? You are pathetic.
You killed like 20 ninjas last issue. Trained ninjas. The best ninjas, according to Shredder. So they split up. Three of the turtles go outside to fight the ninjas, while April and Donatello take to the computer to try to deactivate them. And this is the first instance of Donatello doing machines. You're welcome. Like, this is the first time I think we see an actual character trait. Like, we kind of get, oh, Raph's the grumpy one in this issue. But more of it's like, oh, Don's the smart one. April and Don, you know, kind of hit it off because they're working together on this machine. So the turtles are fighting outside. It's basically this elongated fight sequence. Leonardo makes a remark that robots make his skin crawl. It's such a weird character trait. I don't know if it's ever come up again, because the turtles fight robots a lot in other media. I don't know if they've ever mentioned that Leo doesn't like robots, you know, kind of like how Mandalorian doesn't like droids. I think it's kind of a cool character trait. I don't know if it's ever come up again, but it's basically an elongated fight scene as April and Donatello try to hack in. They end up getting in and shutting everything off at the very last second. Everything goes to black, and then Leonardo pulls out a lighter and shows everybody in the dark, and he says, I guess it worked. And all the Mausers are broken up at their feet. And that's the end of issue two.
I feel like the defense of the Mausers is really worth discussion and examination, because it took significant leadership to decide they're going to do a tiered defense. And I honestly felt the drama as the Mauser horde just continually approached and grew more numerous, where individually they could be handled, but in hordes they were dangerous. And the tiered defense, the explosion, I liked this. This was a good fight scene.
And I kind of just dismissed it as like, oh, it's a fight scene. But no, it is a well-done fight scene. I feel like actually the fight scenes are the best parts of these early books. I feel like the plotting is kind of weak, but because, I mean, Eastman and Laird are artists, they like to draw. The fight scenes go on forever, and they actually build tension, and everybody looks awesome while they're fighting. That's the strength of these books, for sure.
Yeah. I have to say the end of it was a bit meh. the whole the light. They turn off all the systems. The light go out. A bunch of loud noises. Oh, I guess we survived.
Yeah.
Well, that was pretty stressful. You just kind of survive. Press the survive button. What did you do in the dark? How did you survive? Well, we did. Okay.
Well, it turned off all the mouses at the same time, which I do kind of like that it ends on a gag where, like, they turn on the lights. Like, I guess it worked. Like, oh, okay. There's some of that turtle personality showing through. That again, wasn't just really all that present in the first issue.
I guess I'm not familiar with the turtle personality because that one kind of was meh to me. I thought that was kind of a lame ending, but, you know, maybe turtle humor just isn't my style yet.
And maybe. I don't know. It worked for me. It might not work for everybody.
Also, can we appreciate the fact mousers are way overpowered here because we already know they can only fit the size of 5 adult rats in them. How the heck are they eating? And then after they do that, they have to go to a drop-off site, empty, and then return. How the heck are they not getting clogged on all the front one grabs, like, 2 rocks, fills up its capacity, turns around, and has to go back? We never see any of them going back to the drop-off. All we see is the horde approaching. But in reality, is every time they eat a rock or part of a wall or anything, they fill up and have to leave. And in leaving, they end up blocking all the other ones.
That's so strange, actually. You're right. They establish the technology and rules of Mousers, but then they don't necessarily feel any need to actually apply that. It makes you wonder, why did you even bring that up in the first place?
Yeah, I was fully expecting them to try to exploit the returning behaviors of them, or like take the rocks of the elevator. Like, we'll just fill them all up with rocks, and then they'll all have to leave. And it's like,
that would have been actually a much more fun ending, actually. I wish they had done that.
And then it's like, oh, never mind. We just did clever explosives, and then we just fought them hard, and then the lights went out, and we won. I mean, it was dramatic. It was dramatic, but eh.
Yeah. So that ends issue 2. It introduces April O'Neil, who will come up later, and Baxter Stockman, who's become a staple of the franchise. Issue 3, we'll get into it, but this book is something else. So it opens with them kicking their way out of a sewer grate that I guess supposedly leads into Baxter's building. They all pop on out. April thanks them for saving her life and gives them her phone number. So she gives her phone number to the turtles, which turtle did she give her number to? She does, and they all head to their lair, only to find out it was broken into. There are Mousers broken up everywhere, and they also find trails of blood and no sign of Splinter anywhere. Dun dun dun.
Like, now this is getting back to this is getting back to where they came from. Trails of blood, missing people. This is getting back to episode 1.
Yeah, a little bit more. And then Raphael also, his murderous instinct returns because he says, oh, I'm going to go back and kill Baxter Stockman. And I think it's Leo that's the one that's like, hey, we got to get a hold of ourselves and let's not do that or kill anybody.
Yeah, which is weird because they suddenly gained a sense of don't kill from previously where they had literally no restraint. There's no explanation of why they suddenly changed, but they did. They suddenly changed. We just have to accept that now.
So Raphael ends up storming out because he's peeved. They end up catching up to him. I guess he was looking for Splinter and he couldn't find him. And then Leo points his finger at Raphael and says, Raphael, don't ever do that again. Ever. As it would turn out, Raphael would, in fact, do that again for the next 35 years of the franchise.
Oof.
But that's where we kind of get the idea of Raphael's the grumpy loner who's hyper-emotional and reacts to things and wants to handle things all by himself without help, which is defining traits. And again, it's fun to see these traits being introduced to the characters. Because like I said, in issue 1, they're blank slates. So to give them their traits as we go through the journey, we see more about them and we see them essentially tacking on retroactively traits to these characters. It's like, oh, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's good to see something actually that have them have some personality because
the
4 is not too many that all of them can have personalities. They tried to in the Hobbit movie, let's not talk about it too much because it wasn't that good.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
still at least tried to give each of them their own personality. And they had like 13 dwarves, practically 12 dwarves. You can definitely get 4 Ninja Turtles with their own personalities.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and fans of the franchise, like, no, like, they have personalities. But in the early issues, they don't. Because they weren't established yet. So they end up calling April, and speaking of personality traits, I love, Leonardo calls her, and his line is, April, howdy, guess who? Howdy? Howdy, yep. Leonardo? Yep. Is this big Tex Leonardo with his big old belt buckle on his little Ninja Turtle belt? Like, holy moly, howdy? I cannot think of any version of Leonardo that would say howdy except this one.
Yep. Howdy. What an opening.
Howdy. April's like, who is this? It can't be Leonardo, because Leonardo doesn't say howdy.
She's like, new phone? Who the heck is this?
So they're like, hey, can we patrol the city and try to figure out where Splinter is? And she's like, yeah, I got a van. And so they all hop into this van, and this book just completely devolves from here. It's hilarious. So get this. I'm not even going to do the dignity of summing this up beat for beat. This is literally, they start driving, and a cop starts following them because they match the description identically of a van that just robbed the place, right? So they end up in this bizarre, long, long car chase.
Which April is just like, chill with. No, you shouldn't know. April's just like, this is fine. You know, being chased by the police in my van. She only hesitates like once or twice. And all I can say is, woman, you crazy.
Yeah. Well, and the turtles are just like, no, April, they can't pull us over because they'll think we're monsters. And like, lady, you just met them yesterday. But she's running from the cops in this insane car chase, only for them to basically crash right into the actual perpetrators. They escape, and the cops catch the actual perpetrators. And that is the issue. That is what this issue is about. This bizarre, mistaken identity car chase. They all end up in April's apartment. They crash. They sleep. That's the issue.
That's April's drawing is here at their worst, in my opinion. Her facial expressions are like meme worthy because they're so either over exaggerated or just, I don't even know what she's trying to express here.
Also, well, I think they're a little better than last issue, actually.
We can disagree there because here I think she's at the lowest.
Also, can we just agree that when she gets to, after a car chase, she breaks the law, she gets them all into her place, and she's like, what's one more law broken? Because she offers them all beer.
Wait, how old are the turtles again?
They're teenage. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Wait a second.
Oh, gosh.
Holy crap, that's actually kind of a big deal.
You know what? Can we just address this? Baxter Stockman, we think he's the evil one because he has all these elaborate crimes, but none of them work. April commits multiple crimes in this book, and she gets away with all of them. April is the criminal mastermind.
Agreed. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
You heard it from us, folks, kids. You heard it from us first, kids. Thank you.
Remember, everyone, don't trust mysterious ladies who are poorly drawn who try to welcome you into their van and escape from police.
If I wasn't so scared of the value of this microphone, I would drop it. I can't defend this one. I like the other ones. I give a bit of a pass. Like, they're finding their stride. This one, it doesn't introduce any characters. Does not advance the plot at all. Aside from them finding out Splinter is missing in the first place, which could have been a part of last issue had they wanted it to be.
And there's literally no development here either.
Nothing. It's a car chase, and it's not even an interesting car chase. And I think the idea was like, car chases are a movie thing. Can we draw one in comics? The answer is no. No, you can't. Car chases are about... okay. What?
I thought they did okay.
It's okay, but it's like car chases are about movement, and I don't, and stakes, and I don't get a sense of any of that. It's just mostly like gags, like, you know, pushes a couple off a bridge, you're like, har, 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 fun, fun, fun. And then it's just the ultimate cop-out where they just, is a mistaken identity thing. It's like, come on. I can't stand this issue. When I reread these, I skip this one. This one's so bad. it's nothing.
It had a few funny moments or two, Like, I have to say, where the officer leans out the window with a revolver and says, "Wait, I think I can shoot their tires." And his partner's like, "What the heck are you doing? We are driving off roads, and you're trying to one-handed fire a revolver from a moving vehicle at a moving vehicle in the middle of civilians with a revolver of all things. Like, this is not a 9mm. This bad boy gonna go through a wall or two." And you're just like, "I think I can hit him." You lunatic!
I guess that's more in keeping with the turtles. Just like insane fight sequences.
I have to appreciate that his partner was properly done, where actually he followed correct police procedure rather than, "Hey, you think you can have the charger blast away in the civilian area?"
So anyway, I started blasting.
What the heck is wrong with you?
The upside to this issue is the epilogue, where we see the events that transpired last issue from Splinter's perspective, where the Mausers break in, they tear him up pretty bad, and he ends up trying to escape, but he ends up in pretty bad shape. These two guards from the TCRI company come down with some very high-tech weaponry and find him bleeding out in the gutter, and they decide, "Hey, this is a weird-looking rat. Let's take him back to our lair." And they're talking very strangely throughout this, because as we find out at the very end of the issue, these are, in fact, alien brain monsters riding around in human bodies pretending to be humans. And that is the level of complete madness that I expect from a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book.
So that's what that was supposed to be?
Yeah.
What?
Yes, they are alien brain things riding around in human bodies that make them look like humans, which...
I never realized that until you just mentioned it, but now I can see the humans have holes in them for them to pop out of.
Yeah, which obviously is the inspiration behind the Krang character that has become so popular throughout the franchise, the brain in a human body. But unlike his, which is just basically to sell toys, this one actually disguises them and allows them to pretend to be human.
I did not realize that until you said so. I am blind, and I would have missed that entirely.
And it's like, why do we just do a random car chase I don't care about, and then end it on the note of brain alien monsters have kidnapped Splinter and pretend to be humans in a human corporation? That's great! That's wonderful! That's the exact level of complete madness I expect from a Ninja Turtles book. You know, just fun, goofy, wacky stuff. Why do we just do a random VW van chase through New York City? Why couldn't we have done more with the Utrom aliens?
Fair question. I got nothing.
And neither do they, because that's the end of this issue, and we go to the Raphael one-shot, which is going to be our introduction to the ever-popular character of Casey Jones. And also, this is their attempts. I think Eastman has said Raphael is his favorite turtle. I know Laird's favorite is Donatello, but I think Eastman's favorite is Raphael. And so it makes sense to start with him and like, okay, let's take a break from the main plot and try to actually develop these guys into something more complex, I guess. So this is kind of a character study on Raphael, whose character really hasn't been super established well up till now. It opens with Raphael and Mikey sparring again, just sort of like last issue. But when Raphael feels like he's lost and Mikey's gloating a little bit about it, because, you know, he's the party dude, Raphael, I kid you not, pulls a monkey wrench and tries to beat Mikey potentially to death with this wrench until Leonardo basically literally asks, "Have you lost your mind?"
Yeah, I don't really know what to do with that.
And this is our introduction to Raphael's insane anger management problems.
It was written well enough that I can understand his sudden surge of emotion. It didn't seem unbelievable to me that he would in the heat of the moment not understand that the fight is over, or he might grab something and not realize, wait a second, this is a lethal weapon. But that does raise the very... This is just a weird point of when you have cartoon characters sparring like this, they have lethal weapons on them, and yet they're used non-lethally, such that when you pick up a wrench or something, like, that's nowhere near as dangerous as the sword that you guys carry.
Yeah, but there's also a difference of discipline versus blind rage, which is definitely what is implied here with Raphael.
Agreed. It's just kind of bizarre to see a wrench being like the killing weapon rather than, you know, like his own weapon, which we know he has and is infinitely more lethal than a wrench.
I mean, yeah, we have Leonardo shaking the wrench on wrench with two swords strapped to his back, like, you could have killed someone with this.
Yeah, like you already killed like all those people with your swords that are on your back.
You could, I'll wait. You could kill Mr. Body with that in a Clue game.
Brutal.
Which also, Raphael has always had anger management problems. It's kind of how he's written, with the exception of, I guess, the 80s show. He's always the rude, the angry, the grumpy one. But this is a level of madness that we don't normally see from Raphael. Like, oh gosh, you almost brutalized Michelangelo with a monkey wrench.
Yeah, he did. Straight up. Some complete savage.
So Leo basically kicks Raphael out and says, you know, go cool off, which is funny because that's exactly what Leo said he's never allowed to do again in the last issue. And so Raphael hits the streets and he's running around trying to get a grip on himself, trying to figure out, you know, he even asks, like, am I crazy? You know, why am I doing this? Meanwhile, in the a random apartment in New York City, we have a random guy pumping weights, watching television, and deciding he can fight gangs just as well as anybody else can. So he grabs whatever is laying around his house, which consists of a hockey mask and some sporting equipment, and decides to go out and fight criminals. And this is our introduction to Casey Jones.
And all I can say is, well, what a hero right there. He sees a problem and he sets out with his hockey mask and his shovel to solve it.
You don't need a lot. Just use what you have.
Yes. Go out there and see a problem. Do what they do on TV. Kill everyone.
This is the level of crazy that I want from these books. It's just like the wackiest, wildest side characters. And Casey Jones has lived up to that crazy side character role in so many ways over the years. And he's gotten more complexity, but in here he's just like, He's basically nuts. Like, he's always kind of nuts, but this one's, yeah, like, straight up crazy. I would not be surprised if he's high. Like, he's crazy.
He really is. He's losing it, man.
So Casey Jones goes out and tries to find himself a crime, and he just starts beating them up. And Raphael finds the same crime, and he's like, hey, he's not letting up. He's just going to keep beating them until he basically kills them, and he tries to intervene. And I think, again, this is like the disconnect between the first issue and this one is like, didn't you killed so many ninjas, you killed so many street gang purple dragon guys, why do you have a problem with Casey Jones killing these street gang guys?
There's no answers.
No answers. And so of course Raphael and Casey Jones get into a fun little fight. And it's fun. It's cute. It's quick.
What? You just find fights as fun, cute, and quick?
Well, the last one had like, a great...
You're attacking with a lethal weapon.
The last one had like a great like tension buildup. There's nothing like that here. It's just mostly... They exchange some dialogue, and it's sort of the standard like, hey, you can't kill people. He's like, yes, I can. If I don't, who will? And Raphael almost wins until Casey Jones pulls out a driver... literal like a driver for golf, and smashes him in the face, and blood just flies out of Raphael's poor face, and the guy ends up running away, waving it around in the air like a madman, screaming, look out scum, Casey's coming, and leaving Raphael to just moan in the corner. I love these like two panels like on the top of page if you look at the numbers in the classic color classics 139, he's got actual like cartoon, not birds, but like little stars around his head. Like he's done after the hit from the golf club, man. Raphael's having none of this.
Yeah, this was a pretty brutal blow. But we'll see that it's totally irrelevant because he's fine.
He recovers. So Casey's running around, running on rooftops. And I love there's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles billboard on the rooftop behind him. And that is the level of complete turtleception. Did you catch that?
I did not catch that. Man, I'm missing stuff.
No, he's standing on a rooftop, and he sees, like, a car robbery in process. And the billboard behind him, very obviously, is the Ninja Turtles logo. And I love that. It's insane, but I love it. So he hops down, and he beats him up. And I love he throws his baseball bats at this guy as he runs away, and they hit. And I have no idea how that's supposed to work. Especially since it's not like he threw them like horizontally. He throws them both vertically, and they hit this guy in the back horizontally.
Wait a second.
It's on the bottom of page 141 in the trade paperback. Look, he says, strike three, Turkey, you're out. He throws them downward. You can see how that's the way his arms are going. And completely contrary to the way he threw them, he hits this guy in the back, which even if he threw them correctly, I don't know how you'd hit someone with a baseball bat from range. But he figured it out.
Listen, this guy is fighting for justice, and the Lady Justice is on his side, guiding his every baseball bat throw.
Bless you, Casey Jones, and your mission for justice.
You're like, this is a good man. You might, you may not like it, but this is what true manliness looks like. A crazed lunatic wearing a hockey mask beating the life out of criminals with a golf club.
Raphael is the bad guy. Casey Jones is the good guy.
So what's with us in reviewing comics who have bad people who are using sports implements as weapons? This is the second one.
I was thinking, what is it with us in reviewing comics where men wear crop tops?
I've never noticed any men wearing crop tops.
Well, Eddie Brock in Venom Lethal Protector.
That's right now. True, he did.
Casey's but got one too.
Casey is a hunk. He's a real man. Ladies, look for someone like this who sees something on TV, goes out and does it himself, even if it involves murder.
It includes, especially if he's got abs like Casey Jones does.
Also, if he has determinants like Casey Jones and somehow has the ability to hide an entire golf driver on his person without being visible.
So Raphael chases Casey Jones down, and they end up fighting again. Raphael's obviously like, hey, stop treating everything like a capital offense. And Casey's like, no, I will. It's like, but hey, it's been real so long, Shorty. And he runs through traffic as all the cars are honking at him. Which, first of all, jaywalking is also an infraction, Casey Jones. And then I love this. Raphael just sprints across the street over the cars through the headlights. Like, they take the time to show us the headlights are shining on him.
And there'll be no consequences for this action.
No. But it's one. People do see him, and it's like, oh. It was one of those fleshy-headed mutations secretly planning to take over the planet. I read about it in Blaze magazine or a mob hitman and they drive away like not knowing what he was. I prefer that moment better in the film where he just rolls over and he's like, "Was that a giant turtle?" He's like, "Yeah." So you're going to 11? So they're in the park. Graf's looking for Casey. Casey's hiding and he thinks to himself, "I don't like this. We're on his turf now." It's like, why does Casey Jones live in the park? Why does Raphael think that the Casey Jones turf is the park? I'm confused.
That's a good point. I never thought about that. I just kind of assumed like, yes, his turf. How do you know his turf? And, well, yeah, that's a very good question.
So they get back to fighting. It's a fun, long, reasonably long fight scenes. Lots of great art. Casey's rendered fantastically throughout. At least I've always liked how he's been able to draw Casey Jones. Though the weird thing is, I straight up, in my little Ninja Turtles fan group, I straight up had to ask, like, has anybody seen a hockey mask that looks like Casey Jones's hockey mask? And the answer is no. They found me some that were pretty similar from the 60s, but in the 1980s, I could not find any hockey masks that actually look like Casey Jones's hockey mask at all.
That's probably good, because it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, I wouldn't play hockey with a man who wore this.
He was a real man like Casey Jones.
The absolute legend, the unit.
Man puts his life in danger to be justice. This man is the definition of a hero.
Absolute mad lad.
Here everyone is treating him as if he's some type of villain.
So they just keep fighting and fighting. I love this page where the panels get smaller and smaller as they just keep fighting until it cuts to them laying on the ground, grabbing onto each other, just coughing, able to breathe. It's like, you give up. And they get tired of fighting each other. It's like, fine, we're done. And that's when Raphael, of all people, lectures Casey Jones about controlling temper. And then they see a mugging, and they decide they're friends now. and they leap out to go save the day. And that concludes this issue. what did you think of this particular one? What did you think of the specifically the Casey Jones Raphael dynamic? Because obviously it's a well established one, but in this first appearance, I'm not sure if I buy that they're actually friends at the end of this. I feel like they just got bored of fighting each other.
I don't think they're so much friends so much as Raphael asserted his dominance in the end, where he's like, obviously, I am better than you. And Casey's like, fine, I can live with you being better than me. Whereas Raphael would literally die before he'd admit someone was better than him, practically.
I mean, yeah, or kill you with a monkey wrench.
He would literally kill his brother just to prove that he was the best. I don't think Casey Jones has actually amended his ways very much, to be honest. He's kind of hesitant with Raphael's, all right, now we do it my way now. And he's like, fine, because you won. But something tells me that as soon as Raphael is gone, he's going to go back to killing everyone.
it's like Dark Knight Rises, where Batman's like, no guns, no killing. And then Catwoman blows up Bane at the end and is like, whoopsie. I guess we still use guns after all.
Yeah.
So that's the end of these first few issues. We're not through the arc or anything yet, or through the storyline. So just not going to give it a number rating or anything, but how do you feel about these? Going through them again, for me, I feel like they start out struggling because it's like, oh, okay, who are we then? If we're not a joke and we're taking this as a serious superhero, or not serious, but like an actual superhero narrative, then who are these characters? What are they? What's their world like? And it starts out struggling because it starts doing very stock tropes. You know, we have Stock Man. Literally, his name is Stock Man.
You're right.
Who is a very stock mad scientist villain. And then we have a stock car chase. But that ends with aliens living in the stomachs of scientist humans and a man that wears sporting equipment to beat up villains. And I feel like it starts to get its footing again at the end here of these issues, where it's like, oh yeah, that's what Turtles is all about. Just the wildest, craziest ideas we can possibly think of and try to justify it.
Sounds like one of my role-playing campaigns.
I know there was a TMNT RPG, which, fun fact, was called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness.
Well named.
Which happens to be College Comics and Other Strangeness. I did not.
Bruh, did you seriously take the? I didn't know that when I signed up. I think we need to amend our contract.
I've seen that played, and it makes for a fun role playing game just because of how whack the world is.
Or be as whack as you want it to be.
Exactly. Yes.
It ends up being more.
So, would you say you would like these better or less than that first issue?
I was so confused on the first issue. Like, what was happening? I didn't understand that it was a joke. So, I mean, it was, if you didn't take it as a joke, it was a catastrophe. It was awful. It's like completely, completely dumb. But it, now that I recognize it was supposed to be a joke, it's like, this makes sense now. Oh.
But then how do you feel about these characters in this world now that it's becoming less of a joke and trying to take itself a little more seriously?
I feel like you can just totally disregard episode one. And if you do, it makes this make a lot more sense, where you have a lot more generic superhero characters. Everything's quite a bit more generic, less violent, less, even honestly, less strange in a lot of ways. But actually, not much is less strange. Let's be
real. It keeps the strangeness.
Yeah. But I think it almost belongs in a separate universe from episode one. The fact that there's any continuity between them is bizarre to me, because they have the same names and the same characters, the same appearances, but they don't behave anything like each other.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel like it's that far removed for me, but it's pretty close. Like, it feels like a soft reboot of the characters. Like, oh, okay, we gotta take this seriously. So who are these people really? What's their motives? How do we make them likable? How do we make people care about them? Even though, you know, last issue they were just murdering machines and they had no personality, and it was just a vehicle to make fun of Frank Miller's Daredevil.
I mean, well said.
So I obviously, again, we're not rating. I would say I'm pretty comfortable with these. The third issue I can't make, I can't excuse, but the second one is okay. It's fun superhero action. And Me, Myself, and I is a classic in and of itself. The Raphael one shot. It's fun. It doesn't make a ton of sense and it doesn't do a lot, but it introduces Casey Jones, and I love Casey Jones. So that's
we were gonna see Casey Jones again. I don't think he was a throwaway.
No, you will see Casey Jones again, which is why I included this one shot. All the other ones I've cut, like the Michelangelo and Donatello one shot. Like Michelangelo's one shot is like basically Michelangelo finding the true meaning of Christmas, and Donatello one shot has him going to a magical world through the power of a crystal tied to a pencil.
What?
I love them, but it's like these have nothing to do with the plot. It's like straight up. I don't understand. I think it may have something to do with release, but the Michelangelo one shot straight up takes place. I don't understand the chronology of it. It's released, or it's attached in my trade paperback at least, right in the middle of the Fugitoid arc. So they're in space. Okay, that's a spoiler.
What?
They end up in space. So, but it's back in New York City, and they're in April's apartment, which means Splinter is missing. But Mike is out shopping for Christmas presents with his new pet cat. I don't understand why that book is in where it is. I love it. It's adorable. What? Maybe I'll look at it next Christmas, but why is this one here?
I got nothing. That makes no stinking sense.
Yeah, like I don't understand the chronology. My guess, I would have to look at it. Either IDW put it in the wrong spot, which is possible, or it was just Christmas time and they wanted to do a Christmas issue, so they did Michelangelo. It's like, just sort of assume it fits. Not quite where we are, but a couple months ago. But he's also not too worried about Splinter.
Hang on a random Christmas episode ever a bad idea? Star Wars would say yes, but no, you really can't go wrong. Once you create a world this wacky, you don't have rules. Everything is just like a new and exciting turn.
Everything is exactly what I say it is.
Everything is what you say it is, and no one can disagree. And everyone's along for the ride. And if you don't like it, you just stop buying the comics.
But I do like it.
Exactly.
It's like that. I'll never. It's like it was a moment, and I don't remember the. I think it's when he actually puts on the costume, watching the Aquaman movie, and I just felt like this is the screenwriters telling me this is a man who has a big A on his belt buckle and talks to fish. Love it or get out. And I'm like, fine, I'll love it, I guess. And I feel like every issue of the turtle.
Well said. Just love it or get out. Okay. I'll take
it. Yeah. That's the thing with turtles. Like, either it works for you or it does not work for you. Like, if you can get past the name, you are welcomed into the world of Ninja Turtles. If you can't get past the name, newsflash, it's not going to get less weird once you get inside.
I heard something about being in space and then a pet cat, which is already questionable because you're a sentient animal, and then you're like, hey, you have a non-sentient animal? Like, what? So, just from the description, I think this wild ride, this is like the chain lift up, and things are going to go wild after this.
Well, that's gonna end up our episode. We will look at more of this wildness, not next week, but the week following. If you liked what you listened to, and how could you not, give us a positive rating, give us a positive review, give us love and affection.
Please, I need it desperately. Yes. One like is one prayer.
Yes, he needs you and your help. Nathan, where can we not find you?
I already used a few of my favorite spots not to find me. You cannot find me where you are looking because, well, I'm not there.
Yeah. If you miss our wonderful co-host Ben, I don't. Why would I miss him? You can find him on his YouTube channel eating McDonald's Happy Meals in the middle of his live stream.
Thinking about it. This man has no respect.
No respect. You'll find a link to that in the bottom. And if you just can't get enough of me and my delightful insight on life, the universe, and everything, look at my blog.
If you can't get enough of this, seek help.
There is hope for you. You don't have to go crazy and hope for a turtle kills you.
Someone else might kill you, but still, don't give up.
It's unlikely a turtle will do it, though. They agree with that anymore. Why would they kill someone? They've never done that before.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't like 50% of all pictures in episode one was them slitting somebody's throat or stabbing them with knives. Also, their solution to things they can't overcome is not team up for a great attack. Everybody spam projectiles.
All right, everyone. Take care. God bless. And we'll see you next time.